so the reason we're putting this architecture proposal together is because the W3C membership asked for it. A number of people said that it was very hard for them to kind of think of what we're talking about without a set of pictures to kind of explain, you know, how these verifiable claims would move from one entity to another. And so the architecture document is basically there to very quickly inform people about the type of architecture we're talking about. I would even go as far as saying that our audience for this are technical organizations, specifically members of W3C or organizations that would become members of W3C to work on this stuff if the work takes off. And I think that's really all the background that we, well, that's really all the background that we need. Okay. Any questions on that before we move on?
The deadline, that is what, next week or the week after?
Let me look at the calendar. Deadline is, let's say it's the 24th of June.
And what is that deadline? I apologize for not having paid attention to this issue earlier.
The deadline, well, let's say the deadline is really the 20th. And the reason that is because the Web Payments Interest Group is going to review all of this stuff. So, Dave, and really, Adam, to catch you up on where we are, we've been talking about verifiable claims for, and they used to be called credentials, for the last 4 years. 2 years ago, it split off into its own group. So it was in the Web Payments Community Group, again, pre-standardization, experimental. We moved it into its own community group called the Credentials Community Group, where it was further incubated for about 18 months. And then the Web Payments Interest Group, which is an official group, right? The previous two are community groups. Anyone can start them, but the interest group, Web Payments Interest Group, is an officially chartered group at the W3C. And their primary, one of their primary outputs is charters for new work around payments. And the verifiable claim stuff was picked up as one of those potential new charters. And that was around 6 months ago. That's when the verifiable claims task force was created. And the purpose of that task force was to create a proposal to take to W3C. So we're pretty much at the end of that process. And on the 20th of June, we're going to dump these documents that we're talking about in the interest group's lap and say, please read this stuff and review it and let us know if you want to back this work further, meaning take it officially to W3C management and membership for a vote. We are having a face-to-face meeting on the 1st of July about the proposal. So Dave, to answer your question, that's why we have this deadline.
So this is a hard deadline for getting a group vote about whether to approve the documents in their current form and then put it forward to the rest of the W3C for approval. Sorry, when I say the rest of, I heard you say staff, and then I wasn't clear whether you meant staff or the rest. I actually don't care. I'm just trying to understand the sort of broad strokes of this. Assume it gets approved. What happens to it after that?
Then it goes to W3C management, and management has to be convinced that it's something that the membership wouldn't have severe issues with. And I think we have a potential roadblock there in that the management is very concerned about any work around claims and identity and things of that nature. And if we have buy-in from them, if we can prove that, you know, we've been building consensus for the last 2 years and more people are getting on board with the work, then they would put it to a vote, a W3C member vote, which is where 419 companies all, you know, give us a thumbs up, thumbs down, or, you know, not interested votes.
Okay. If they give a thumbs down, what happens then?
There are two thumbs downs that we could get. We could get a thumbs down from management, and that means that we haven't answered one of the key questions that they have for us. And typically, the management is echoing what member companies are whispering in their ear about.
Mm-hmm.
And these
mm-hmm.
are large member companies that don't want to know that they're
right.
opposed to the work. They don't want the public
okay.
to know they're opposed to the work. And then we have to kind of respond to those criticisms. We've gone through this process twice before. So management has been unconvinced twice over the past year that they should take it to the membership, but they have always come back with very vague requests for
right.
information, like, have you talked to so-and-so? And
right. Okay.
You know,
so thank you. I know this is taking a long time, and I, again, apologize I didn't do this homework sooner. Actually, I hadn't really understood that I should have.
There would be no way for you to know except for us to have this conversation. It's
right,
not,
and things in New York were a tad rushed there. So I'm trying to figure out a good way to navigate here. The thing I'm seeing is I have a bunch of questions about the stuff I'm looking at, this, and more importantly, the stuff I'm looking at has changed dramatically in just the last week or two. And it's not that the changes are good or bad, it's that they're changes. My experience is that when something changes this much this quickly, it means it hasn't had time to get into people's brains and into their discussions enough for them to know how it will be used, which strikes me as exactly the issue that you're saying these votes are trying to consider.
Let me clarify that a bit. I don't believe what we're proposing in this document has really changed when it comes to kind of the tribal knowledge of the Credentials Community Group and the Verifiable Claims Task Force. So those communities look at this and say, yep, looks about like the same thing that we've been talking about for the last 2 years. Now, when it comes to what was talked about at the design workshop, that's where there's, you know.
Okay.
All
right.
That's where
so,
there are differences.
Right. And I tried to make some annotations on the document that you circulated, and we didn't get around to talking about those. But, an example of a very basic question about both this version and the previous version is where's the identity in this? So we've got a holder, we've got an issuer, we've got an inspector, we've got a couple of storage locations, but the thing that the claims are being made about, the entity that the claims are being made about, is never referenced in this architecture, which strikes me as something of an issue.
Yeah, and we've been calling that thing the subject of the claims. So the holder may hold on to verifiable claims that it is either the subject for or it is not the subject for. The subject is something else like a pet. And that's a good question. So that's the first thing we should say. You know, should we put the subject in the diagram?
That was one example of a fairly basic question. Another one was From looking at the diagram now and looking at the text around it and then some of the discussions that took place in New York, my suspicion is this is actually a point of differing views among people who've been around the topic for a while. And that is that we have claims that are, where they come from, that's clear, that's the issuer. Where they go, actually seems less clear. And the reason I say that is in the current document, it appears that claims go to the holder and are held in the repository. And that's an unambiguous statement. And yet there appeared in the discussions that I was around to be a belief that perhaps that upper box, which is currently labeled registry, and I think it had a ledger as a different name earlier, was a place to go to verify the claim. So it's a public mechanism that allows you to test not the accuracy, but the validity. And what I mean about the difference is An issuer may or may not be making valid claims, but whether they made them can be validated.
Right. So let me explain why that ledger part was removed. The W3C is currently just starting to look at quote-unquote blockchain technology, right? So they have a W3C/MIT blockchain workshop happening at the end of June. If we walked in there with, you know, a decentralized ledger as a part of the architecture, we could get responses. We could get severe pushback. And on top of that, the decentralized ledger is not a fundamental component. It's not a requirement. It is a add-on to the system that makes the system more functional, but it is not a core requirement of the system. The decentralized identifier registry, the only thing that exists there for is for the claiming of a decentralized identifier, meaning it's a number that you can prove that you have ownership over using public-private key crypto or something like that, right? So we tried to narrow the scope of the diagram down to the minimum necessary to bootstrap the ecosystem. And the reason we did that was that for every box and arrow that you add, it is potentially a new spec and protocol you have to define at WCC.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and as I said on the call last week, the basic simplicity of the architecture was something that I found really appealing. It's unusual for people to do it, and it usually is a classic case of the Blaise Pascal quote. I'm sorry this letter is so long I didn't have time to make it shorter, and a simpler architecture means we took the time to make it shorter.
So that gives you some background on why we've, you know, removed some of the components and organized it in the way that we have. And that's not to say that the decision's, you know, made. It's just, you know, there are a number of things we're trying to achieve with the document, and I would argue that this architecture document isn't the actual architecture that we want to end up with. The actual architecture that we want to end up with has decentralized ledgers in it, it has oracles, it has all these other mechanisms that are required for other use cases. We just can't march in there with a block diagram that has 10 things in it and expect the W3C to say, yeah, we want to, you know, take a bite out of that, right? We're concerned that we would have a very negative response if we did that. Longley, you're on the queue, and I really should shut up, and maybe you can take over answering some of these questions.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think you even mentioned on one of the previous calls that it's good to have a very simple diagram for a lot of people to be able to consume, and then have a number of other diagrams that might dive in a little bit deeper and provide more advanced features and things for people to understand. For other sets, groups of people that are more interested in understanding how you can break certain roles down into maybe sub-roles. So for example, we've got, you know, just like holder on the diagram, and holder really could be broken down into like a software agent that can be responsible for moving claims around. And further beyond that is a repository, which is really just a storage abstraction. Is my audio coming through for everyone
else?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Okay.
Adam, I just lost it.
And something is very similar. Something similar can be said about the other party that actually is requests and receives these claims to do something with them. It would be good to have a single box to talk about that party, but that party can also break down into multiple roles where, you know, there's somebody that's requesting this credential, but they might delegate the verification of that credential off to some other third party. And so there's a lot of...
Everyone got disconnected.
Okay.
Hey, is that you, Adam?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's fine. I think everyone got disconnected except for the people in the office.
Oh, okay.
We're waiting for Dave Crocker to join.
Mm-hmm.
Hello again, this is Dave.
Hey, Dave. What did you last hear me say?
I didn't hear you say anything. I was talking for a while
okay.
and got done and then finally noticed that there was dead air.
All right, perfect. Okay, so do you want to go ahead and say what you were saying and then I'll pick back up where I left off?
All right, well, let's see. So I think the question I ended on was that the decentralized identifier registry that is in the current version that you produced really is only and exactly an identifier registry, which means that you check it to find out whether an identifier is registered and to whom.
Yes. So what I was going to say is we have been trying to make the diagram that we present to people in general be as simple as possible. However, there are other aspects and other things that can further break down the roles in the diagram into other pieces that more advanced parties might be interested in learning about. So, you know, we've got this really simple diagram that makes it easy for people to understand that the major parties where information moves around. And then beyond that, there's other layers and pieces that can fit into this, and we can have other architecture diagrams that describe how those work. So, for example, you were saying, where is the identity? You know, what are the claims actually about? And in the current diagram, we just have this one holder box. You know, maybe that's not a good name for it, but if you could further break down the holder box into, for example, the subject that the claims are actually about, the maybe a software agent that is responsible for actually transferring claims around, making it possible for you to share them or present them very easily, and then maybe some kind of repository, which is really just a storage abstraction for where these claims might go. And furthermore, where they might go can break down into something, into some piece of software, a piece of hardware that you hold on to as a person that holds these claims, or it could be a blockchain that either holds on to public claims about you or holds on to some kind of proof of publication for private claims, but it allows you to assert that these things have been published and are out there, so that if someone were to present a private claim, you could verify that that a record of it, of its publication exists on a public ledger. So there's a number of these different pieces that aren't necessary for the core architecture, but are important pieces for implementing interesting features and making the system more generally usable and providing more, solving more use cases. And the same thing could be true about talking about, for example, the party that receives these, that requests credentials or claims and then receives them to do something with them. That same role, which we've called a consumer or inspector, and we're trying to figure out a good term for it, could really be a number of different roles. It could be the party that's requesting the credentials is a separate party from maybe a party that actually does the verification. Maybe they delegate the verification of these claims off to some other third party that could talk to a public ledger, you know, depending on however the claim is implemented. Or it could, you know, check some kind of whitelist for a bunch of issuers that it trusts. Or, you know, it could be that issuers themselves receive claims from accreditation bodies, and you can follow a chain of trust to figure out if you trust those. So there's a whole variety of more advanced stuff that can go into this architecture, but we don't want all of that in the simplest diagram for people to just understand. We've got parties that issue these credentials, parties that there are about, and or essentially the people that control these claims, parties that can request them, and then some concept of an identifier that has independent existence that you can associate these claims with, and that gives you more power and control to move these claims around and to store them in however you see fit. So all of those things are kind of part of the core architecture. And you could even arguably say you can take out some of the independent existence part and still have a system that works with claims, but we feel like that's kind of a very important part to make this a new, interesting system.
So the concept of layering or macro granularity for one version of the architecture and micro granularity for one that's more elaborated. I'm a firm believer in that. I think that's just great. The challenge is to make sure that the labels and boxes in the macro don't change as you, or don't have to change as you get the micro version. And so there's a challenge in deciding what boxes you need and what labels to put on them. And so my original question was whether the box labeled identifier registry only and exactly is a place for registering identifiers and who owns them.
Yes, I think if we're going to include the decentralized registry in the basic, the most basic version of the architecture, then yes, that is all that it does.
Is it going to be something else when you add more detail?
It could be, yes. It could be something else.
If it's going to be something else, then the label is probably going to be a problem. And,
yes.
And while I'm saying that, I'll also mention, saying something like decentralized is a way of talking about an implementation issue. And it's not just on the average, but in my experience always, better to have architectures like this not make any reference to implementation details.
Right. I believe one revised version of this architecture called this box an oracle, which is it was extremely abstract. I don't know if that's far too abstract, but it tried to get away from implementation details by using that term.
So we came up with Oracle because we couldn't come up with something better. And what pressed us in that direction was exactly the fact that that box ended up having to do multiple functions. And one of them was the identifier registry. Another was the ledger, but ledger points to a certain kind of functionality. It's a journaling functionality. And we put a couple more functions in there that were different from the other two. And so we were looking for an encompassing term. And Oracle is just an awful word. We weren't having any success coming up with a better one. Since then, I'm coming to think that actually having it be called something like reporter would be generic without being quite so strange a word. But so the other one is the more you and others have talked about the holder, the more I suspect it's quite a bit more than a holder. I understand that it does, that the intent is to focus on the fact that it's holding claims, but the reality is it's also, from what I gather, it is the entity being identified.
Most of the time, this is true. It's certainly true that you could have claims that are about, for example, a baby that was born or a person that has died, in which case the actual subject is not the holder of the claim because the subject no longer has agency.
I think that's a striking and extremely useful basis for noting that identity, the identity being identified, is a separate box in the architecture. It's a separate construct, and it really ought to be distinguished. And not having it here at all, frankly, is pretty odd. I mean, I think I understand why that didn't happen. But some of what I think also causes a challenge in this exercise is the fact that you can have actors that have different roles at different times. And again, I think that's that leads to some confusion about the difference between implementation versus architecture. The architecture is about what role is being performed by the box. And the fact that two different boxes might be performed by the same actor, that's okay, but they don't have to be compressed into
right.
One box.
Yes, it shouldn't make a change in the architecture, is what you're saying. The fact that any particular player can have multiple roles should not change what the architecture is. When you're examining any particular role, or any particular player that is taking on a particular role, you should be able to look at the architecture to understand their place in that system.
And let's see. Another issue is for holder, you have a descriptive tag that says that it manages the registry entry. That doesn't sound like a holder to me. That sounds like an owner or an administrator. It's quite a different function.
Yes, and even the term holder has changed over time. I want to get Manu in here in a second, but we have a certain concept of that goes back to sort of self-sovereign identity that has to do with the concept that you are in control of your own claims, but that is a different concept from the fact that you might employ a software agent to do certain things
right.
for you, you know, and
right.
there's a bunch of these things, and we're trying to keep the architecture, this particular architecture document, as simple as possible so that no one spends any cognitive cycles trying to tease out those subtle differences. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we want to throw into more advanced architecture documents. But Manu wanted to say something about specifically about identity. He's describing, so give him a second.
Right. So just to quickly, hold on, homie. Just to quickly explain why identity, we try to stay away from identity. Very early on, we had identity in a number of these documents, and the response that we got back from reviewers was vehemently opposed to any work that we're going to be doing because we were trying to solve identity or tackle the identity problem, and it has a very long history of failures, and W3C absolutely does not want to get involved in that, you know, rolling failure that is identity and identity on the web and the internet, right?
Let me only interrupt because I do understand the religious wars that go around that word, and I honest to goodness didn't mean to invoke them. The reason I started using it is because there's an identifier, and I think that's an easy term. I don't think that it tends to cause controversy. The problem is somebody owns that identifier, and I was using the term identity, and I'm perfectly happy using any other term anybody wants.
Yeah, I mean, we call the thing that the verifiable claim is about is the subject of those claims.
Fine, and you did say that, and I apologize, I didn't invoke that instead.
But holder is a bit different. Like, there's a part of this that I don't think there's a part of the architecture that you have not been exposed to yet, and that is that, you know, we're trying to achieve multiple things here. One of them is to design a privacy-aware architecture. So at no point should the issuer or the repository know who the holder is giving the claims over to, right? So, you know, these boxes are effectively firewalled from one another through the protocol. So that's, you know, one kind of important distinction. And, of course, I forget the other one now. Yep, it's gone. Sorry.
I want to add a quick caveat to that, which is at no point should they know that unless you have given consent for them to know that. Go ahead.
So that's fine, and I don't think anything we're talking about now touches that issue, and I don't think it affects it one way or the other. My guess is that it's unlikely that the architecture can be done in a way that shows this privacy feature. And that doesn't mean it's not there. It just means I don't think that's going to be a particular bit of insight that somebody looking at the diagram can tell or not tell.
Right. Oh, I remember the second point. I believe that's true, which is why we haven't figured out how to do it if you can do it, and I'm not convinced that we can do it. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, you know, the self-sovereign bit is important. And kind of going back to, you know, the reason why we stayed away from the word identity, there are things that we have put into the diagram specifically to demonstrate why we are different from FAML or OpenID Connect. Because the biggest pushback we got back in the beginning was, I don't see how you're any different from FAML and OpenID Connect. We have, you know, organizations that can issue claims. We have organizations that request claims. And all of that stuff is supported in OpenID Connect. The thing that OpenID Connect and FAML and most federated identity systems today, they don't support are two things, right? One of them is the concept that the subject of a verifiable claim can exist independently of an identity provider, right? And the way they do that, or the way that we're saying they do that, is through these decentralized identifiers. If you have a mechanism where anyone can claim an identifier for themselves and they manage it, that is one of the core requirements for having kind of this, for people being able to have independent existence from
right.
services like Facebook and Google, right? So
sure.
That's, yeah.
Okay.
Real quick, Dave, that's the reason we don't have Oracle in here, right? So
right.
we wanted to get kind of specific about the key differences that allow us to start the work. And then in the future, we will have a box called Oracles, and the decentralized identifier registry will go in that box.
So if I've heard the issue correctly, in effect, saying decentralized in that box is, pardon me for phrasing it this way, but I actually think this is accurate, it's a marketing function to help viewers of this diagram understand an essential functional difference between competing architectures.
Exactly right. And you could view most of these documents as marketing documents. We're trying to sell...
No. I'm sorry. No. I understand that these things get used that way, but as you said, this is for technical people to look at. And I'm assuming, and I think it's really important, that this be something that helps guide technical people doing design and implementation. And the fact that it also gets used for marketing. Because if all you're doing is a marketing function, we're in a very different space than I thought we were.
That's true. Yeah. Let me rephrase that. What I mean is that the W3C advisory committee members are going to spend maybe 30 minutes tops looking at the whole proposal. And there's way more content here than that, right? So we're trying to get to the, you know, we're in every one of these documents, we're trying to expose them to information that will get them to quickly understand that what we're proposing is new, it is narrowly scoped, and it is something that is achievable.
Right. I got that, and that also explains why you wanted to shove it down to a couple of pages rather than 8 or 10, if I heard that correctly.
Yes.
Okay. So let me make a couple of suggestions. One is, for the purposes you've described, you don't need the repository box. It's an internal function to the holder, and it will be an important one going forward, but it's not an important one to understand the basics of this architecture.
Let me push back on that a tiny bit. The thing that differentiates this architecture from OpenID Connect is the fact that you can separate the repository from the issuer. OpenID Connect and most federated identity systems today, the issuer and the repository are one and the same.
So your point is that you want to stress that there can be a third party, even though all access to the information in the repository is through the holder.
Yeah.
And that's really an important point. Yeah, this is why I said internal. Even though it can be that all access is only through the holder, you want to highlight that it can be an independent third party.
Correct.
And so there'll be some standard interfaces to it, presumably.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Then I would say the same is going to prove to be, I'm just going to go with what you said because it certainly made sense. The same can be said for the inspection function, is it can, and I suspect will, often be delegated to an independent third party, and then having standard interface for that is equally important.
I would say that that's true. I think there's going to be I would expect there to be a standard interface for the party that is requesting credentials as well. It needs to be able to make a request to some kind of user agent that can blind who the request is coming from, and then pass on that request to a repository or to an agent that works on behalf of the holder, as such that they can communicate with the repository to fulfill that request. Now, when you're talking about the inspector, you're talking about effectively being able to independently verify, for example, a digital signature on one of these credentials or these sets of claims. And that you can talk about that as being some standard interface. There would be a standard algorithm that you could run over a credential. If you have the credential in hand, you can run this algorithm and determine whether or not something is verified or fails verification. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about protocols for communicating over a network, sending something off to get back a standard verification response or something like that?
So I was actually thinking more the latter, I don't doubt for a minute there'll be cases where the third party inspector is standing between this system and the entity that's going to consume the inspected information. But in terms of how to model this, it is probably better to have the entity that's going to consume the information be shown as directly connected into the rest of the architecture, and have the inspection function being delegated if it wishes to. Just as the holder might or might not want to delegate the repository function. And so it adds some symmetry and flexibility in the architecture that you don't get otherwise.
I agree with that. It's just a question of whether or not we're going to make the diagram too complicated by putting too much of that in there. I don't think that we necessarily do, but that is what you just said is my view of how the architecture should look as well.
So whatever the argument is for having repository in there, I will claim is exactly the same argument that ought to hold sway over the right-hand box being two boxes.
I think they're very close. I don't know that they're equivalent, but I do think that they're very close.
I'm saying the argument I think is the same argument. The functions are different.
Yes, and I'm saying the argument is almost the same argument. There are subtle differences, but I don't think that they really matter with respect to whether or not it should be in the architecture document.
Okay, and so I'll go one step further. The fact that the subject is not shown anywhere in here, I think that can be resolved very nicely by having the subject be above the registry and only one line going to the registry. And by the way, that will be the entity that manages the identifier. The holder just holds them. And the arrow from the registry to the holder and from the registry, actually from the registry to any of the bottom three needs to go from the registry towards those three rather than into the registry. Because then the bottom three, the issuer, the holder, and the what's currently labeled inspector, all they do is query the registry.
That's true. The last thing you said was true. I'm processing what this new diagram would look like. I'm going to give you my gut reaction because we've been thinking about this so long, it's hard for us to kind of look at this in different ways, which is exactly why this conversation's really important and a good one to have. Subject, I would argue, is not necessary in the diagram because we don't really talk about verifiable claims other than having them in these white boxes, right? I don't know if knowing that there is a subject helps understanding or not. I'm saying I don't know. I'm not claiming one way or the other. To delegate the inspection to a third party, I think is absolutely true. I can see that the argument is more or less the same as having the repository there. I'm not convinced that it's important to point that out. One of the reasons being that the system is designed so that every website receiving this information, receiving a claim, can do a preliminary inspection on the data, meaning they can just check the digital signature and see whether or not the data is good or not, right? If they're delegating it, it means that the credential that they got in is fairly complex in nature, and it requires far more than just a digital signature check to verify that it's true. And in those cases, I argue that those credentials might not survive in the ecosystem. I don't know. I'm postulating that they might not survive in the ecosystem. And I'm wondering if we even need to have that discussion with the at this point, right, for the approval of the work. My concern is, you know, every box that we add is another set of things that we have to defend as being, you know, mandatory in the architecture. And I'm concerned about that, you know, basically detracting from the core,
right.
the core of the proposal.
So I hear you, and that's part of the balancing act. Is you want to include enough to be coherent, and you don't want to include any more than necessary to simplify the discussion.
Yeah. So we could talk about what we can remove from the current diagram, and the system still more or less function. Right. So we could ask about what happens to the system when we remove these things. So I think we could remove repository and still have a completely functioning system, because repository is in the holder and who cares? It's an implementation detail. It's an important implementation detail, but the system kind of functions. I think we could remove decentralized identifier registry, because quite honestly, that is not proposed in the first version of the working group at all. We're just talking about the claims format, the data model and syntax. We're not talking about protocols in any way, shape or form, because that was another hot button issue that we did not want to raise. But if you take the decentralized identifier registry away, you have a system that is no longer self-sovereign, right?
What was the hot point?
The hot point was creating a decentralized identifier mechanism in the first place, right? So people were claiming that this is a completely new R&D project. You are definitely not ready for standardization. Don't even talk about it until you have a system that's bootstrapped to a million people, and then we can kind of talk about what this decentralized identifier registry is, right? So the assumption was, it's great that you want self-sovereign identity, but do not try and standardize that at W3C. It's way too early.
I can't say that I disagree with them. And that gets into the challenge of how conservative does this have to be versus how visionary is it allowed to be?
Right. Yeah, so I think this is allowed to be somewhat visionary. I think it at least where we've fallen is the decentralized identifier registry is somewhat visionary, right? We can point to technologies that exist today that could potentially achieve it, and we're saying very clearly we're not going to do this in version 1.0. We just need to make sure that the verifiable claim data model and format that we create allow for these new types of identifiers to be plugged in. So we're saying specifically, you know, maybe the first iteration will use URLs, and those aren't self-sovereign, but that's totally fine. And our vision is that eventually we won't use HTTP URLs. We will use decentralized identifier URLs, and that'll make the system self-sovereign, right? And I think that, you know, that's kind of why we're putting the decentralized identifier registry in there right now, just to say, look, you know, this is where we're headed. We're not putting I'm getting into Oracle. We're not necessarily putting Oracles in there or public ledgers or decentralized ledger technology in there because while we want those to be parts of the ecosystem in the future, we feel that it would confuse or send W3C advisory committee representatives down the wrong path. We don't want them thinking about that. We want them thinking about the core problem. Right, the first step in verifiable claims, and then show them the immediate step after that, but do not expose them to, you know, what we want the system to look like in 10 years. So in general, that's, you know, that's our thinking on it. And it's, you know, and all that's up for debate. I mean, it could be
okay.
That.
Well, let me, in case this isn't clear, I'm trying to understand enough of where things are and what you have in mind to, so that any suggestions I make are at least take that in. What I think I just heard you say makes me unclear why you kept the decentralized registry in there.
Because we want to demonstrate the difference between OpenID Connect. Effectively,
so how do you counter the fact that there's no operational existence proof to counter the concerns for this being a research project?
I didn't quite understand the question. I think I know what you're getting at, but didn't quite.
So you said that you had gotten pushback about the decentralized registry as being a research project, and I think that's a valid concern. I mean,
yeah.
It's something to do. It's exciting, but the reality is we don't really have an operational example with a million people using it. And so if they push back before on this, why aren't they going to push back again?
Because we're not saying that we're going to do this in the first iteration. And we're saying we might do it in the second iteration because organizations like Blockstack exist, IPFS exists, we're having these, you know, design workshops at Rebooting Web of Trust, and this is a topic that's being discussed. We know the technology exists, it's, you know, Kademlia DHT or it's, you know, some blockchain related thing. So yes, absolutely, it is a research project, but it is a research project that is being actively worked on, and at some point in the future, we think this thing is going to exist.
So that part is fine, but the distinction between here and now and understood, and by understood I mean with operational experience, versus targeted, is a really important one for an exercise like this. And the enthusiasm that tends to dominate about the cool new stuff, and cool new stuff often, it's always cool. Sometimes it succeeds and sometimes it fails. But the enthusiasm for it often gets in the way of making sure that the less cool, less new, more reliable, better understood stuff actually works.
Right. I wanted to jump in here and say one reason for having it in here, and maybe we should have it in here as, you know, like sort of grayed out or with dotted lines or something to that effect, is to demonstrate that this architecture is fundamentally different from existing architectures where you could not put these new pieces in here. By changing the architecture in the way that we're suggesting allows you to build these new pieces and allows people to innovate in these spaces for future standardization. And so that future standardization is not even possible today because of the architecture in existing identity solutions. So by changing the architecture to this other mechanism, rearranging these pieces around the way that we have, we can enable innovation in these spaces for future standardization. And I think that's the argument that would be made. So we don't have to say today, we need this to be able to standardize this. We can say, if we standardize these parts can evolve and people can innovate in the space. And clearly we could standardize further in the future based on how people go ahead and innovate in the space.
So let me make a suggestion, because I think I now have enough where I understand what's been driving you, where you want to go, and what some of the issues are. Start with something that is as simple as possible and might not actually look all that different, maybe not even any different from existing systems. And that is, registry, because you've got to have something that is a global arbitrator of identifiers, and we'll call that a registry. So have a registry, have the subject above it, have the issuer, the holder, and the inspector, and that's it. That doesn't look exciting. It doesn't look all that different from other stuff. But then you have another version of this which has the elaborations we've talked about. And that tells people where this starts and where it's going. And it does it easily. They can see the increments, they can see the differences.
Yeah. So So yes, that is when on the call yesterday when I said maybe we have two versions of these diagrams, that's kind of what I was trying to get at, right? It's a, you know, here's an oversimplified view that gets the core concepts across and what we can potentially achieve today. And then in the future, you know, this might be where we end up. And there's a connection from today to tomorrow. I'm waving my hands on a number of those statements because, you know, what you just suggested, the concrete changes that you suggested, sounded interesting to me. I can think about how to, you know, I can kind of see how we can break out those boxes and show how we move from one system to the next. The next question that I have for you is, you know, do we show people both versions of the diagram, or do we just show them the high level boring one and leave it at that?
Well, you've already indicated some what I'm going to call marketing or sales problems if you only show the simple one. And that is, you get back the pushback that says, how is this different? And in fact, the whole point behind the simple one is it's not supposed to be different. It's supposed to be familiar.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's really important to show both. And I think with the first one, we can say this is kind of how things work today with some subtle differences. And with these subtle differences, this is where we can head in the future with this architecture. And the purpose of this working group is to build a data model and data syntax around claims in version one that allows us, that will allow this future sort of visionary architecture to arise. And once people start using this data model and format, people can be innovating in the space to build these other components, and we can see future standardization with those other components later. And I think that's how the document should sort of read.
So to repeat your suggestions, Dave, you're asserting that subject needs to be in here somewhere, and you're saying put it above the decentralized identifier registry, switch the arrows, and potentially either put repository into the holder and just leave it there, and just don't show it, or break repository out and then break a third-party verifier out of the inspector and show those things. Is that
so for the simple version, just have the subject, the registry, the issuer, the holder, and the inspector. I'm not terribly sanguine about inspector because in fact you want something about people, that entity using it, but we'll stay with the inspector given the vote yesterday. And that becomes the first diagram. And the second diagram shows directions of enhancement, and it contains all the various additions that we've talked about. And it introduces each one and explains what its nature is and what its status is, what's difficult, what's easy, where things are going.
Wait. So you're saying take decentralized identifier registry out, or just rename it to registry?
Just rename it to registry, because you have to have a registration in order to ensure global uniqueness in terms of the operational experience of the net today. The only operational experience we have is with a registry of some sort. And so
that's also important because it establishes independent existence from the, for example, the issuer, or if we're not even showing the repository,
oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter as much. But it establishes that break, and that,
right.
That is a core architecture change.
I'm sorry, it's a change from what?
From existing systems like SAML, OpenID Connect. Those things do not have that separate registry. The identifiers are all integrated into the issuer and identity provider software because they're all the same entity. The same entity provides identifiers, holds on to claims about things,
okay.
and issues things. They're all the same identity. So by breaking these pieces out and saying they can be separate, that is what's core to being able to even build these new systems in the future.
So that's interesting. I'm so used to thinking of the DNS as the example of the global registry as independent from the users of the names that I keep forgetting, which is really stupid, but it's nonetheless, I keep forgetting, we have all sorts of identifier creation going on in various systems. Your Twitter name is not in the DNS per se, as just an obvious example. And so I hadn't thought about this as something that is an enhancement over the existing. But actually that's cool because now you get to make the point about the independent registration without getting bogged down in the research aspects of this.
Yes. And I like that as well. I like that as well. I do think there's a potential negative there, which is people will say, well, all of a sudden they're going to start asking the implementation questions about it. Well, how the heck do you build this registry? And, you know, we have to be careful. Like, well, that's version 2. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to let people innovate in that space. But we want to break those things apart so that people can figure that out.
Well, the short answer is that URLs, or what the heck, I guess what's in vogue is to say URI, URIs are an existence proof for a global identifier registration service. And in fact, the early version will probably use something like that.
Yes.
And so there's no research there. I mean, it may have limitations, but it's a well-understood construct.
Right. And that is the model we're going with in the data format. You know, the identifiers are just URIs. So that is easy for us to kind of pivot there. I can see people kind of feeling like that doesn't fully answer their question, but I think that's okay.
All right. So we're coming right up on an hour, which is like incredibly efficient of us. I mean, it's not like any of us planned that, or at least I certainly didn't. So I'm wondering how comfortable, I mean, who else is on the call and how comfortable they are with where things have gone in this discussion?
Adam here. I'm working on the document. I'm really new to all this, so I was really just observing all of what you were talking about, but I really appreciate your feedback and your pushback, because I think it really gives us some ideas of what type of pushback we might be getting from the W3C. So I think it definitely gave some food for thought, and I really appreciate it.
So any other comments? So what I'm inclined to offer is to take a pass on the document and make the kind of changes we're talking about to produce something that you can look at and think about, see whether it causes too much heartburn or not.
That would be fantastic.
That sounds great.
Okay. I have to admit to being less facile with GitHub than one would ever expect, but I'm thinking that I can download that and play with it for the rest of the day and then try to circulate it. I'm inclined to just send it initially to Adam and Manu for rough review before trying to upload it.
Yeah, that's fine. In fact, I can just zip up and send you the raw source files if you want.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Okay. All right. And you're fine just editing the HTML by hand and or what, using an editor?
Actually, isn't the original in XML?
No. The original is a Google Doc that we changed to HTML. So the other option is that you could make a copy of the Google Doc and just work in that. The image, the diagram,
whatever,
a Google Doc.
Whatever you'd find most helpful, and just to make sure I'm looking at the right version, because I think we now have multiple, if you'll send me a link to that, I'll play with it producing a new document and send you the link to that.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I will send you that right after the call.
Great.
Okay, thanks so much, Dave. We really appreciate you taking a look at this.
Well, I hope it turns out to be helpful. As I said, I am sensitive to where you are in the phase, and it's always a pain when somebody comes in late stage and rocks the boat.
You're rocking it in a very good way. This is very positive, very helpful.
You haven't fallen in yet? Wait a minute. Let me rock a little harder.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks, Dave. We're at the top of the hour. I will send you those links and the raw source files, and we'll take it from there.
Super. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care.